Welcome to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete Sunshine 96.7 FM. Join us as we celebrate the sparks that ignite, the events that inspire, and the songwriters that create. With your host, Steve Robb.
Singer-songwriter Lisa Bastoni is a 2019 Kerrville New Folk winner and is a 2019 and 2020 Boston Music Award nominee under the Folk Artists of the Year category. She has shared the stage with Lori McKenna, Little Big Town, Arlo Guthrie, Regina Spektor, The Secret Sisters, Teddy Thompson, and many more. Wow, Lisa Bastoni, welcome to Song Creating.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you along. So did you just burst onto the scene, or have you been doing this for a long time?
I started when I first moved to Boston in 1999. I started going to the open mics around town, and it's a long story. I had a job that I quit to become a full-time street musician, and traveled around for a few years doing that and starting to play venues. And then I completely burnt out on music and quit and went back to school to become an art teacher. And then I got married and had kids. And it was when my kids were 1 and 3 in, I think, 2015 that I came back to music. So I already had made a lot of friends in the area and the local music scene my first time around. So then coming back to it many years later, I already had a community who was kind enough to welcome me back.
That's nice. So when you were busking, was that primarily in the Boston Cambridge area?
Yes. Yeah. It was, on the T platforms and out in Harvard Square.
Oh my gosh. Jeez, I wonder if I saw you at one of those points somewhere along the way. It could be. How was that experience? I imagine an interesting learning experience.
Oh, it was. It really was. I met so many people out there. I was able to build my mailing list, and it was a time when people were buying CDs. So I really was able to support myself through CD sales and then and tips, and also build the mailing list and start to have indoor shows too.
Now, if I recall, Boston does not require a permit, but Cambridge does.
I never tried outside in Boston. There is a process for getting a permit for performing on the T. And I'm sure it's different now, but you have to go to an office and get your picture taken and you get a little badge.
You don't have to audition?
No. I mean, it may be different now. I haven't looked into it in a very long time, but back then you didn't have to audition. They'd give one of those to anybody if you could figure out how to get to the office.
Okay. So what was the job that you quit? I mean, a nice secure job
I first moved to town to work at an art gallery on Newbury Street, which was a very respectable job. It was lovely. I really enjoyed that job a lot. And then I was offered a job working as a personal assistant to Al Cooper, is a well-known songwriter and played keys on Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone.
Sure.
And I'm just a huge Bob Dylan fan, so I couldn't say no to that offer. But it was when I was working for Al that I tried busking for the first time, and I made more in 2 hours than I did working for Al Cooper. So I quit my job. And
how did Al Cooper feel about that? Was he supportive?
Well, no, because I had played a song for him, and I'm really shy, and I was even more shy then. I played a song for him, and I'm sure I was mumbling and singing very quietly. And he said something like, "Well, that song is really good, but you can't sing." And I was so hurt by that it motivated me to be like, "Well, I'm going to figure out how to sing." And I think he wasn't that surprised. A lot of the job, I mean, he had great stories. He was overall like a fascinating person to work for, but I was spending a lot of my days sitting on his couch waiting to go run errands or check the mail or help him clean up his house or whatever. And I just felt like I needed to go live my life a little bit more than just
sit. How old were you then?
Oh, I was probably 22, 23, 24, somewhere in there.
Where you still are not, the requirement of making a lot of money is still in your future. You just need to get by and live your life. I feel like that's something I want to do now that I've lived my life.
Too.
I want to go back to busking. It just seems like so much fun, but yeah, you can't make any much money out of it. Yeah. Nobody's carrying cash anymore either for tips.
That's true. So, well, I think people now have the little QR code or like a Venmo, their Venmo.
Yeah. Link. There's something it's just not the same as hearing that clink of change in the bucket or actually seeing that dollar.
Yeah.
But there's always hope for that. So back at this time I assume you were writing.
Yes.
Music? Okay. And you had your own CDs with all your original music. When you took this time off, did you take time off from writing and everything? Was it really?
My guitar just collected dust. I barely picked it up even for myself. It was really, I'm sad about those years that I didn't keep playing and performing, but there's a time for everything. And I was focused on trying a different path for a while, starting a family. And it really was my grandmother, I think, who every time we talked, she would say, "Why aren't you writing? You should write. You should keep playing. Don't stop playing." And she was a big, big piece of coming back to it, too.
You kind of just wanted a clean break?
I think I was just so tired. It is really hard to make a living as an artist. And I know that it's possible, but I just couldn't figure out a way to do it without feeling like I was kind of spinning my wheels. And anytime you put that much pressure on something that you love, I love music. And then for music to become my only source of income, it just puts so much pressure on it that I think it can take some of the joy out of it. At least that was my experience, where I kind of lost touch with my reason for doing it.
And yeah, I think I can relate to that. I my career was as a self-employed photographer all my life, where you're just constantly hustling. And if I never had to pick up a camera again, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah.
But that we're actually, whenever we travel, I just take my phone. And I take such great pictures, and it just puts the joy back into it. But carrying around a big camera and lighting and all that, I guess I can associate with that. Sometimes you just have to divorce yourself from it for a little while and see if you miss it.
Yeah.
And apparently you did miss it. Did you start playing for your kids? The lullabies, that sort of thing?
No. Well, I did a little bit of that. When they were really little, I felt like they saw the guitar as competition. So anytime I had my guitar in my arms, they would try to take it away from me and like crawl into my lap or need something in the middle of a song. Like they don't understand. Like it'd be great if you could wait till the end of the song to ask for a snack or and that's their job. I mean, they're supposed to be that way, I think.
I'm not sure if it's her job, but okay. I used to play for my daughters when they were in bed, and then they and it was like all the other girls I used to play for. I just put them to sleep, so it worked quite well. So back when you were a kid, were you involved in music
growing up? Yeah, as a teenager, I was. I mentioned my grandmother. I should say she was my first guitar teacher. When I was 13 or 14 years old, she gave me a guitar for my birthday. And
where'd
she
you grow
played.
Up?
I grew up in Connecticut, in a town called Westport. And she played guitar as a hobby. She was a professional artist. And she would have these great music parties where she'd invite friends over to play. And once I had a couple songs down, I started sitting in the circle of the song swap, and
awesome.
That was, yeah. And then I had some friends who were playing locally, like at little coffee shops and stuff. And I started playing those kinds of gigs when I was in high school, probably my senior year and maybe a little bit in junior year too.
Yeah. You had to overcome your shyness for that.
Oh God. Yeah. But it's the thing about like, if there's something that you really love, it will, you'll get over, I think you can get over the stage fright or nerves because it's, you want to participate so much that.
Was the music you were playing back then similar to what you're playing now? Like kind of folk genre?
Yeah. I mean, I've always, I kind of wish I had branched out a little bit more. Maybe I still will, but I've always loved, like from the time I started playing, I really loved Bob Dylan, and my grandmother had like every Joni Mitchell record. So I was like the high school weirdo who like in the 1990s, like really loved Joni Mitchell and Emmylou Harris and Willie Nelson and the Beatles and classic stuff, like, you know, Carole King. And I don't know like any of the bands that were popular when I was in high school. Like I missed a lot of that, and I think I've stayed pretty true to that style.
Sounds like it. You didn't have a posse of friends similar to your taste in high school?
I found some other Dylan fans, and I also was kind of into the Grateful Dead too, so there was some overlap with like the Folkies and the Deadheads and then Fish, which I can't believe I just said out loud.
That's okay. So didn't take part in the school, the musical program at school.
No, like the musical theater people were like the extroverts, and we like, I was friends with like the kids in the art building. So like, I really loved my drawing teacher, and we would hang out, but that was not, the musical theater stuff was definitely not my world at all.
Whole different crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know with these big high, I don't know if it was a big high school or not, but like with any high school, you really do have so much, you find your tribe.
Yeah. Well, they had a great theater program. They really did. I was lucky to, the school system where I grew up was amazing. And I'm grateful for it.
So you went to college, you said, for art, I think. Is that?
Yeah. Or did I hear that? My major was art history, and then I had a double minor in studio art and Italian.
And were you playing music at that time too?
I was. My school had a coffee shop. A coffee house series, like for singer songwriters, and I volunteered one year to book the series, which was interesting because it gave me that perspective on like just booking and, the thought process and decision making that goes into running a series, and like, just from like putting out the coffee mugs to making the coffee to like deciding how we're going to spend our budget. And I'm so happy that I had that experience too, as now I'm reaching out to venues to book my own shows. Right. I totally get it. If I don't hear back from them, I don't really take it personally the time.
This wasn't an open mic then. This was actually, you were organizing two or three songwriters an evening, or one.
We would have people like Ellis Paul and Katie Curtis and Peter Mulvey, Pamela.
Oh, so people who are touring.
People who are touring. Oh, okay. They would come play our series.
Wow. What school was this?
Skidmore College.
Oh, in Saratoga. Oh, yeah. My gosh, of course. Yeah. So Cafe Lena and...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Saratoga's great.
Oh, the Cafe Lena open mic I did go to when I was at school there.
I think it's the oldest running continuous open mic in the country.
It could be. I love that place.
I believe so. Yeah. Oh, Saratoga's a great town. I go up to Lake George all the time. So
nice.
Pass through. It's beautiful there, especially in the summertime. I don't know if you experience summertime there. It's a very different scene than the rest of the
school. It is. I did. I worked at the racetrack one summer in Saratoga.
Oh yeah.
I was a security guard.
Uh-huh. Okay. Trying to envision that right now. It does not compute.
It didn't go very well. I think I quit before the end of the summer.
Okay, so I love the progression here through the lives here. We came to after college, mm-hmm. came to Boston. And it was, and Boston at that time was, well, Boston at many various times was just a mecca for 20-somethings to come to. My wife and I both came here in 1984, mm-hmm. Separate from each other, but we both came within 2 months of each other. And, you know, at that time, if you were in New England, it was just a great city and still is a great city to come to. I wasn't involved in the music scene at all then. I kind of regret that. But came to it a little later. But even then, I mean, it just continued with Passim and the Uncommon Coffee House, and there's just so much. Yeah. So there was always a place to go.
Yeah, every night of the week there was an open mic that I remember, like in the early 2000s. It was there was so much going on. I mean, if it wasn't an open mic, there was just great live music every night, all over the place. It was great.
Yeah, I really feel like I missed out on all that. That's killing me. Well, at that point, I had my kids, so it wasn't like going out was as easy. But I do regret some of that. Was there one particular night that you got that spark or that something just clicked and you said, this is really good, I'm gonna go for this?
Yeah, I mean, the songs that I was writing in high school were not good, I think. But you have to go through that. And then I remember the Club Passim open mic being especially, you know, the Cantab had a great open mic. I loved that one. And I think the Passim Tuesday night open mic was one that I went to a lot. And it was so well attended that they had to switch from, I think you, in the beginning you could play two songs, and then there were so many people signing up that they would have three people on the stage at a time, and each person got one song. They would do like a quick in the round. Wow. And there were people like Josh Ritter and Mark Arelli, just so many people who were so good, playing the open mic still. And, that was so encouraging. I mean, it really showed me like, oh, I really need to figure out some things about writing and performing. And it was such a great place to be at that time, to learn more. I mean, I feel like with music, you never feel like you're done learning. Hopefully, like, I still feel like I have so much to learn. But that was an especially inspiring time.
It's a balance when you start hearing people of that, at that level of intimidation and inspiration.
Yeah.
How do you call that time from the old days of playing the busking days to the current days?
I call like when I first moved to Boston to when I stopped playing music. In my mind, I think of it as like my first go around with it. And so I started writing songs just because I liked the feeling of having something new to play at the open mics, just to test it out, a song out on an audience. And I was hearing everybody else's songs and feeling very inspired by what other people were doing. And then one of the great things about busking was that I felt like I didn't want to only play my own songs. I was learning dozens of cover songs. And I think that taught me a lot too, because I'm like, there's probably a common thread with the songs that I was choosing. Like I was always thinking about like, you know, what is it that draws me to this song and how can I incorporate that kind of feeling into my own songs? Just intuitively, like how is a song put together and how can I bring that structure to my own writing? I feel like we can learn so much by learning other people's songs, that I feel like that was another gift of busking, the repertoire.
So I may have had the chronological order wrong. The open mics that you're talking about were when you were busking, right?
Same time. I would get up at like 5:30 in the morning and then go find a spot for the morning commute and play somewhere for a couple of hours and then go home and take a nap and then go out that night to an open mic or wow. to a gig. That was my life for a few years.
And you didn't work a coffee shop in between those. That was your life.
Yeah.
Was there a particular songwriter who you really found was your inspiration? Any one particular one?
I don't think there was one in particular, but it was, so many songs. It was like, yeah. I know I was playing some Bob Dylan.
I know that's a tough question to pick one person.
I know. I was playing John Prine, Lucinda Williams, Suzanne Vega.
Let's talk a little bit about the current Lisa Bastoni. Mm-hmm. You started again, kind of kick back in around 2015, you said.
Yeah, I started writing songs again then, and then I had an album come out in 2017 that I worked on. I was working with a producer named Felix McTeague, and he was able to take the guitar and vocal tracks that I sent him and add instrumentation to it. And I was recording really in the middle of the night in the kids' playroom, like on a really old laptop, a cheap USB microphone. And somehow they were able to turn it into a full album with a band and everything.
Okay. So he added other instrumentation, drums, yeah. and everything else yeah. that you need. Did you add your own harmonies?
I did. Yeah.
Okay.
And I had my friend Josh Cantor played bass on that. And he was somebody that I met when I was out busking in 2000, 2001. And he has since become the organ player at Fenway.
Kidding.
Yeah. So like, it was great to bring him back into the recording process.
I remember during COVID, he had a Facebook yeah. live series going yeah, every
that was
Sunday
so
or so.
Wonderful.
Yeah. He was terrific. So yep. some of these people must have gone, you must have called them out of the blue, maybe, and said, Lisa Bastoni, whatever happened to you?
Well, Josh especially, like, he was so supportive early on. And, like, it was so heartening to reach out to people and feel supported and encouraged and to kind of pick up where we left off.
That's great. Well, they were probably very happy to have you back. So you obviously matured a little bit in songwriting you had some life experiences
yeah.
and of course anything happens like that. Did you, did things change a little bit for you in terms of how you approached a song, process it, the writing?
It's hard to say. I think, I definitely had more to write about, like the life experience thing, like you said, that was very real. But at the time, I remember thinking like, well, this is like when I was a teenager. Like when you're a teenager, you're just going through so much in your life. There's so much change and growth. And music for me when I was a teenager felt like such a life preserver. And I felt that all again as a new mother. I felt like I was really reaching for a life preserver. Like I was had some serious like postpartum depression happening, and I was reminded, well, this is what music is for. Music can really save you. And that's what I felt like I was reaching for that thing again, with just that many more stories and experiences to think about and sing about.
You're listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete, Sunshine 96.7 FM.
Even though I know better, and it still looked the same as when you were there. They cut down some trees, but the barn is still standing. And there's a light inside somewhere about to turn on. When I cry, my love you as long as I can. I would fly if I had wings. How I wish I could see you again. And I can still hear your footsteps running down a stairway. And I can still see your smile as you open the door. A new radio tower has gone up in the distance, but the backyard birds still whistle your song. When I cry, my sorrow's a string. I want to love you as long as I can. If I had wings, how I wish I could see you again.
Welcome back to Song Creating. We're here talking to Lisa Bastoni. The song that we're going to talk about, Sorrow's a String, was that, when was that written? At what point?
That was probably written in 2019 or sometime in 2019, I think.
And it comes from some experience, personal experience. We don't need to name any names, but it sounds like there's a relationship here that may have gone south.
Oh, not at all. Actually, if there's time, I'd love to tell you the story of it.
Well, let me just see if I misinterpreted something here. Oh, yeah, actually, I probably did misinterpret this a little bit, but this is the point of this podcast, is for you to tell us the story, so please.
Well, I think I can guess what you may have assumed the song was about, because I like that, because I like to leave enough space where the listener can assume things about it and maybe find something to relate to in it. This was a song that I wrote about my grandparents' home that was my home, my spiritual home. I feel very connected to this place. And after my grandmother passed away in 2017, the house stayed in our family for a while as we figured out what to do with the property and how to, they were artists. And so they had a huge amount of artwork that, that needed to find new homes. And, so I would go back there to just kind of sift through everything and process the loss of somebody who meant so much to me. I was so very close with my grandmother. And then after the house was sold, I continued to go back there just to feel that connection with the place. And it just, I might start crying if I think about it as I'm talking about it, but it was like the more time that passed, the new owners hadn't really done anything yet. There was nobody living there. So it just became this property that was abandoned, and to see the combination of nature taking over again and the developers changing the property, but not for the better. They cut down these 100-year-old trees. They leveled. There was a formal garden that had been there for 100 years that had like roses and all the plantings that my grandmother had added to it. There was a beautiful grape arbor, and it just was leveled. And there was a studio barn that my grandfather had built in the early 70s that was just, that I had lived in for a while, that was just sitting empty. And it just became like this really depressing shell of a place. And I had to finally like force myself to stop going back there. So that's what the song is about. And the idea that my sadness is what makes me still feel connected to this place. That's the meaning of sorrow is a string. But also realizing that it's not the place, it's the feeling. And that is with me always. That never changes or leaves me. So I intend it to be comforting ultimately, even though it's kind of a depressing song.
You know, it's funny. I guess I was thinking as I heard this and read the lyrics of the Bare Naked Ladies tune, This Old Apartment.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Oh, well, it's he goes back to the old apartment, and he kind of relives all the places where he and his girlfriend or wife had lived. And so yeah. I probably jumped to conclusions here.
No, I can see it that way too.
Well, there's not that many songs written about a house, so I just made that rash assumption. What's the status on the property now? Have you been back?
I can't go back. I don't know. I can't go back there again. It just got too sad. But I find like it's so familiar to me. Like I can walk through it in my mind. Like, you know, those places that you know so well.
Oh, sure.
It's sort of like if I have insomnia or something, or if I'm feeling sad, it's like, okay, I am like walking up the steps, I'm opening the door, I'm walking down the hall. I can see every angle of it so clearly. It's as if I'm there. And in every room, I feel lucky that I have had a place like that in my life. That was such a source of comfort and just that feeling of home.
Yeah. So I'm glad you just explained what the title is and how it works into the Sorrow's a String. I was going to ask you about that because I don't think you'll have any competition with anyone else naming their song the same name. Because it makes you curious. What exactly is she? You know, where does this title come from?
And I feel like I've heard that somewhere, like just thinking about grief and how that's maybe like one of the last connections that you have when you lose somebody, that your grief keeps that connection alive. Even if it's painful, it's a sign that there was love there. And so even grief is hard to let go of sometimes.
I'm listening to this song, and it's got a nice little waltz. It's a 12-8, I think, the tempo to it.
I think of it as 3-4, but I think it's...
Well, it's kind of something. A 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2, which I guess, if depending on how you look at it, it could be 6-8 or 12-8 or...
Right.
It's got that nice waltz feel to it. How often do you write in that... that time signature versus a 4-4?
Not very often. I think for this one, the chorus came first, and I just was sitting there playing it, and that's how it came out with the cadence of the phrasing of the lyrics. sometimes they come out that way.
We're on a Zoom call here, and I can see a violin on your wall. Now, is that something you play as well?
I don't. I wish I did. I love
it. Just looks good up there.
That was my grandmother's father's violin.
Oh my gosh.
So he played, and I just recently learned that he met my grandmother's mother at the music shop where she worked. She worked at a music store.
That is not just a violin.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be here if it weren't for that violin.
It's true. That's what you could say. Yep.
There's such a sound that comes out of strings, and I guess I didn't really hear. I don't think you have strings on this song, but there's some. It sounds like I think there's some lap steel or what was that I heard? I'm trying to think as I listen to it. It was just so enjoyable to listen to. I'm not sure I thought that much about it, except that everything really blended very, very nicely, and it has that nice kind of an open small town feel to it.
Yeah. Let me just check and see what the instrumentation was. I haven't listened to it in a while. But that was from an EP called Backyard Birds that I made with my partner Sean Staples over the pandemic. And I played guitar, I think, and I definitely sang on it, but I'm not sure if that's him playing guitar or me. And then he played all of the other instruments on that track. In my liner notes on Bandcamp, it just says Lisa Bastoni, guitar, vocal, Sean Staples, everything else. I'm not sure what that means, but so everything else.
It means
is
that
here.
Sean is incredibly talented, is what
he
it
is
means.
So talented. He plays everything.
Yeah, it's good to have friends like that.
Boy, yeah,
that's
so
great.
It's probably some bass, percussion, dobro. Maybe there's dobro.
That's what I'm hearing. Yeah,
there.
It's not the lap steel,
harmony.
But the dobro. Yeah.
Pump organ. I would guess that there's probably some pump organ on there.
Yeah.
Maybe some mandolin. Yeah.
It's got that kind of prairie sound to it.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful. And you really give the song some space too. The lyrics aren't filling it up. You've got these pauses between some lines, and it just opens it up and gives you that time. It's really very sweet. Do you have you been down to Nashville and paid a visit down there?
I've been there a few times.
As a working artist or just as a visitor?
A little bit of both. Uh-huh. I love Nashville, and I would love to get back there more often. I went to the Country Music Hall of Fame twice. I love that. And I played a little like unofficial showcase one year for Americana Fest. But another time I was there with my friend Naomi, we were booked to play a venue, and they had double booked another band that night. So we ended up playing on the sidewalk. And Nashville like is not as it's not as much of a busking town as
no.
As Boston is, so we were a little bit out of our element, but we had fun.
They actually have music coming out of all of the they've got these like transformers or things on the sidewalk.
Oh,
there that
yeah.
Stand about 5 feet tall, and they have speakers, and they're all
oh,
playing
wow.
Some kind of music.
Cool.
Yes, it's crazy there. So when you played, whenever I see Laurie McKenna on somebody's biography, I'm totally impressed. What was the occasion with that?
I think it was, I feel like I might've opened for her twice. One time I remember it was in New Hampshire. There were two times that I can think of that I opened for her. She's somebody who I admire so much that I feel like I just get even more awkward than normal when I'm around her. Cause I just love her so much. So I think I just was kind of watching her from a little bit of a distance the first time. And she was so sweet. Like somebody had a baby with them for this show. So she was like, let me just kiss your baby. Like she was just holding a baby the first time. And then the second time was in New Hampshire. And I opened for her and I played a song about my mom. And I remember her saying, Lisa, your song about your mom made me cry. And I was just like, yes, like I made Laurie McKenna cry.
That's great. That's great.
I feel like that's a claim to fame. Absolutely. Her songs, like she can just say a single word and it will make me cry. So
yeah.
Yeah,
no
I
kidding.
Love her songs.
Well, you know, as I told you when we had our songwriting round about a month ago, Lisa and three others here, and I hear a lot of Laurie McKenna in your voice.
Thank you so much.
I do. And also, I think in your songwriting, I kind of get a sense of that. You played a number of beautiful songs, and the shyness factor, I think, has that I didn't see any evidence of that.
Oh, good. I can pretend that I'm not as nervous as I feel.
I think you, you've overcome that. You know, I don't know how many people I've interviewed so far that have said they had to overcome shyness or still are shy. And you don't know it a lot of times when you get up there on the stage. You have that guitar in front of you and that microphone in front of you. And it is kind of it's almost a guard, you know, to stand behind and kind of hide behind. And it does help then just be out there in front of everybody. Almost it doesn't allow you to, you can never be naked if you have a guitar in front of you. Right. I guess it's maybe the word. Well, Lisa, let's see. We can learn more about you. Anybody can learn more about you at lisabastoni.com, which you got your own domain. Yes. Isn't that great?
It is.
I just, you know, there's a lot there, and from the website, then you can venture on to hear her music in all different places. And I really thank you for being on here. Any famous last words you want to leave?
No, just thanks for taking the time to talk about this song, and I can't wait to listen to more episodes of your podcast.
Well, there's a couple of people you know that are on there, so you might find some new secrets about them that you didn't know before.
Good, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. All right, Lisa. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete. If you like what you hear, you can find Song Creating on your favorite podcast app or at songcreating.com. To check out my own music, go to steverobb.com. And until next time, keep a song in your head and music in your heart. Thanks for listening.